Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Factory Must Grow, Episode 4. Today, I'm going to be flying solo, recovering a bit from my vacation to the beach, which was amazing. The weather was perfect, the waves were perfect, and taking long walks on the beach was, you guessed it, perfect. It was about as good as a vacation could be with friends, and I'm very, very thankful I got to take some time off. And more importantly, away. Sometimes it's just nice to get away from the home and go somewhere else, and I gotta say, it was very nice. So I hope you all can do the same for yourself at some point. Today on the podcast, we're going to start with another mod spotlight, as usual. We'll discuss the Factorio Friday facts from the last 2 weeks, since we were off for a week, and we will also talk about what makes a good factory game, which is probably a topic that we'll talk about more than once on the life of the podcast, but I think it's a really important topic, and we're going to dive into it a bunch today. The mod spotlight today is editor extensions. This is one that I get a lot of questions about when I am streaming Factorio, and it's not, I don't know, it's a pretty unassuming mod, and when you use it, it's really helpful. The main thing people use it for is the lab, and we'll talk about that in a second. But essentially what it does is it adds more features to the Factorio map editor, which already exists. You can get to the map editor by typing /editor in the console. I don't remember if there's a hotkey for it or not in default vanilla Factorio, because I've had editor extensions for so long. I don't think there is a hotkey. And that's one thing editor extensions does, is it gives you a hotkey. It also adds a button to the quick bar area so you can access the editor. And I think the biggest feature that most people use it for is the testing lab. In the normal Factorio editor, when you enable it, it allows you to edit the world you're looking at, which is just the novice surface. Or Novice, I forget what I'm calling it these days. And you can add buildings or add biters or add trees, and you can do all sorts of things. But what you can't do is just test out a build easily without messing with your current base. And the personal lab in the editor extensions mod allows you to kind of try out, oh, what if I build this building and then that building and I have, you know, 27 iron ore per second. You can establish all of that without messing with your actual base. And that's really nice because the testing lab is a separate inventory. It's a separate surface. And so everything you do can be kind of figured out separately. And then you can copy it and make a blueprint, go back to your real world, and then, you know, paste the blueprint there. And so it's kind of like being able to try a creative mode in Minecraft or something without actually cheating. And you don't have to fire up a whole new save to be in creative mode. You can just switch back and forth between the editor with one hotkey. And it's really fast and easy. Works really nicely for like train blueprints and stuff when you don't want to have to destroy a bunch of trees and cliffs and everything to paste your blueprint. So I really like editor extensions. It also adds some super entities like infinity loaders and radars that go super far and easy infinite power. So you don't have to worry about establishing the infrastructure to test the builds that you want to test. So yeah, I highly recommend editor extensions. It's a pretty lightweight mod. I don't think it has any UPS considerations to worry about. I forgot to mention the author, Rygard. He is the author of many a wonderful Factorio mod, and I know I've mentioned this before, but he got hired by Woob, and he's one of the main people who has modded in a bunch of things in the Factorio GUI. He knows a lot about the graphical user interface, and so I think they hired him because he made so many great mods within the GUI that, you know, within the mod GUIs, the ability to mod the GUIs, that's what I'm trying to say. And he did a really great job with all of that. And they were like, we need this guy on the team. So a lot of the mod spotlights will probably be a Rygard mod. If you're looking for lots of good quality of life mods, just search for him on the mod database and you'll probably find a lot of good ones. So that's today's mod spotlight. If you have an idea for a mod spotlight, please submit it on the Discord and I will consider it for the next one. Without any further ado, let's jump into the Factorio Friday facts. We've got a lot to talk about. I don't even know. This is going to be a long podcast probably because I've got to talk about 2 weeks of Factorio Friday facts and we have a big topic. So we'll get through these fairly fast, but I don't want to skip anything that's important. So Factorio Friday facts 405. was all about a whole belt reader and a new logistics GUI. So right now in Factorio, if you want to observe what's on a belt, you have to hook up every single belt section to a wire. And it is pretty difficult and annoying to do. You can't just click one button. You have to click a wire and click on every single belt, or you have to blueprint belts that are connected and then paste those next to each other. It's kind of a mess. It's really ugly because the little graphics that go over the belt to show that it's connected to a wire covers up the belt. And then when it's on every single belt segment, it just looks ugly. It's really tedious. But now there's a setting when you select the wire and the belt, you can just click read belt contents and you can select the all belts mode. And it will read every belt segment that's connected to the belt you have the wire hooked up to. So only one wire connected to one belt reads the entire thing all the way up to and before the section you're looking at, and it's broken up by splitters or side loading. So it'll go all the way to the next splitter forwards and backwards on the belt, and it'll go straight through undergrounds too. Because it's side loading, it won't work to do like a straight section onto a halfway underground, which I use a lot in my playthroughs to get one lane kind of connected, but I think that will also stop the reading of the belt. So it'll just be like the one contiguous belt segment. And that's really handy because it's going to allow you to do sushi setups so much easier. And we'll talk about that in a second. But the graphics are pretty cool too. So instead of having the little bars that go over the rail with the little scanner, it only shows a bunch of yellow rails along the sides of the belt. There's nothing that actually goes over the top of the belt, so it won't obscure the items on the belt. And it's cool. The graphics have little tiny cameras to show kind of that the belt is observing the items that are on the rail. So that's fun. And yeah, so it'll make sushi setups a lot easier because you can just create a whole loop, and you can, with just one wire, measure the total items that are on the loop. And if the total items are less than the amount that you want on there, you can, you know, enable another belt that kind of lets that item onto the belt. The most obvious use for this is going to be science packs. You know, you want, maybe you've got 50 belt segments, which is a total of, let's see, each belt holds 8 items. So that would be 400 items, and you've got 8 science packs. So your theoretical maximum would be 50 of each pack. You want a little bit of free space. So maybe you say if there's less than 30 of a particular pack, you open up the gate, so to speak. You turn that belt on for that science pack. Maybe it's a side loading. And then you can easily keep 30 of each pack on your little sushi setup. Things like that. I do think it could even revolutionize larger builds for things like Pyanodons, where you have... In Pyanodons, there are buildings that need 14 ingredients. And if you want to use belts for that, we're talking 7 belts minimum. And I'm wondering if, because of the low throughput that you need for certain recipes in Pyanodons, I'm wondering if a sushi setup will actually be better now that we can easily read the whole belt. You could set up just a big sushi loop, and you could add, you know, for some of the animal products, those are sometimes like 2-minute recipes. And so it's okay if there's only an item here or there on the belt because the throughput's so low. You could potentially provide 6 or 7 ingredients on one belt, and you don't have to connect a bunch of belts and a bunch of inserters. It saves you a lot of space. It saves you a lot of setup time. It saves you a lot of inserters because you only need one inserter for that belt instead of one inserter each for 7 different belts. And so, yeah, it'll be great to have, I think, for sushi builds and even just reading throughput. You know, you'll be able to, rather than clicking a wire along 7 different tiles, you can just read the whole belt. Very excited about the whole belt reader. The next thing they mentioned in Factorio Friday Facts 405 is faster rocket launching. Right now, rocket launches are kind of slow because you have to build the rocket, then it has the whole animation of the rocket coming out of the rocket silo, and then it launches, and then the silo closes, and then the next one gets built, and then it opens up again, and it repeats and repeats and repeats. But they decided, okay, apparently you need to launch a lot of rockets in space age. And so they were like, we got to figure out how to make this faster. So what they did is they made it so that there's a buffered rocket. So as soon as one rocket's done building, it can already start building the next one, even while the animation of the, you know, the alarm going and the doors opening and all that, even while that's happening, the next rocket can be built. And if by the time the first rocket's done launching, if the second one's already done, the doors won't close. So the silo doors will stay open and the next rocket will then come out of the silo and launch. And then if you've got the next one done, that'll come out of the silo and launch and the doors will just never close until you don't have a buffered rocket. So that's pretty nice. It'll allow you to get more rockets out of the same silo, which, you know, again, because of quality speed modules and things like that, you're going to be able to launch a lot more rockets from one silo than you could in Vanilla Factorio. The next feature, which is a pretty interesting one, is pump filters. They mention that you can, you know, just select a pump for fluids and set it to a filter. So you could filter it to water only or oil only or heavy oil or light oil. And the reason that's interesting is because unlike belts, you can't really mix fluids at all. And, you know, it'll prevent you from placing pipes if it would mix two fluids together. So why on earth would you want a filter on a pump? Because you can't have different fluids in the same network anyway. Well, the reason that I can think of that's the most simple is a train stop. Because you might have a single train stop that could bring water, it could bring crude oil, it could bring heavy oil, it could bring, you know, if we're talking mods, you could bring mineral water or trying to think of modded fluids. There's a million, right? You could bring, well, I say petroleum gas, that's not a modded fluid, but, you know, if we're talking pianodons, you've got hundreds of fluids. And right now, there's not an easy way to deal with that. The way you do it right now is you would pump all the fluids into a single tank. And then depending on what fluid is in the tank, you would enable or disable certain pumps out of the tank. And then you would kind of vacuum out the tank in different directions, depending on what fluid ended up in there. But now you can skip that step and you can just have six different pumps all along where the fluid wagon is going to stop, each with a different filter. And then you can connect each of those pumps to a different final, you know, pipe network. And that will allow you to essentially, and I guess you could use both sides. So that will allow you to do up to 12 different fluids in the same train stop, really without too much work. And right now you have to do a lot more work than that if you want multiple fluids to be able to go to the same stop. I think that's pretty handy. They do mention, and this one's very interesting to me, they mention sushi pipe networks. And I think that's interesting because mentioning sushi pipes officially makes me wonder if they're going to add even more features to fluid handling. Because right now, sushi networks don't work very well because if there's even one drop, if there's 0.1 of a fluid somewhere in a pipe, it will block another fluid from flowing past it. And that can be really annoying because there's no easy way to get rid of it. You might be like, well, you can just have a pump vacuum everything out and then you can put the new fluid in. And that's true to a certain distance. But I want to say that if your pipes are long enough, they will sometimes they'll never vacuum out fully, even if you have pumps, you know, extracting from that network. So that's really interesting. I'm wondering if they're going to give us more tools to handle fluids and separating fluids, or they're just kind of expecting that we'll make smaller sushi fluid networks because a larger sushi fluid network just doesn't work because of that, you know, rounding error. And there's always like 0.1 left in a pipe somewhere and that sort of thing. So unless they give us a way to maybe automatically flush a network, or if maybe there's a way to set it so that if there's 100 of a fluid next to 0.1 of a fluid, it'll just delete the 0.1 of a fluid. Something like that could make it so that you could more easily do a sushi fluid system. And people have said, based on a comment that I think it was Arendelle made in the one about the terrain, the Factorio Friday facts about the terrain, it sounds like the fluid system might be getting some sort of changes in the first place. So we'll see if that actually ends up happening and what tools we get. Hopefully we get something. Pump filters are great, but obviously the more tools, the better. And it seems like they're improving every single aspect of the game. So I wouldn't be surprised if they also improved the fluid networks in more ways than just filter pipes. And then finally, the last thing they announced in Factorio Friday Facts 405 is a new logistics network GUI. Right now, you can hit L and it'll show you your different logistics networks and the items within it. And it's not that useful of a feature. I probably use it, I don't know, once every few hours. I want to see if I have something in the network, or sometimes I want to see how much I have in the network, but it's pretty rare that I need it, and it's not super useful. It's pretty much just like, do I have this or do I not? And you can hit L, search up the item, and you can see. And it's really hard to know which network to look at if you do have separate logistics networks, because you can only see the name of the network, and it's really hard to tell if that network is the one you want or not. And so they acknowledged all of these shortcomings, and they were like, we had to fix this. We had to improve this, especially because we're talking five different planets plus space. You've got logistics networks everywhere. And if you want to know, okay, do I have, you know, iron plate 7, I'm just making up an item. You know, if I have item 7, we'll just call it item X. There you go. Item X. If I have item X in logistics network on this planet, and I want to know, do I have it on this other planet? How are you going to figure that out easily? The current system would not have worked for that. So they kind of talk through, and it's cool. You should go check out the page yourself. But they outline their iteration process of how they started making some changes. They used the train GUI, where it kind of shows you each train and a little mini map for each train. And then they were like, yeah, that didn't really work that well, because there was just a mini map for each place the item was, but that wasn't that helpful. And they kind of talked through the different iterations, and they settled on what I think is pretty handy, is a glued on remote view panel is what they call it. And so when you open up the map, you can pull up the logistics view. And I think you can just pull up the logistics view, and it'll essentially pull up a map view, and you can easily see which network you're looking at, because it'll highlight all of those roboports and their ranges and such. And it also shows you the members of the network, which is all the different chests and bots and roboports. And it will show you all of the items within that network sorted by amount. And you can easily, you know, find which one you're looking for and find the item. One feature they don't show is being able to click on items, and that would trigger a search for that item within that network. I think that would be really cool if you see iron plates over on the left. You know, maybe there's 10,000 iron plates in your logistics network. I would hope that you could just click on iron plates, and then it would like flash on the mini map all of the places that iron plates are in that logistics network. I think that would be a pretty cool feature. They didn't mention anything like that, so I'm not sure. We'll see if there's much that you can do with it. But either way, it's definitely more useful than it is right now. So that's a nice little change. And that wraps it up for Factorio Friday Facts 405. Mostly quality of life stuff, but again, it's quality of life stuff that you couldn't do with mods before, right? Pump filters weren't really a thing, at least not that I know of. If pump filters could be a thing with mods, I don't know of any mod that added that. And faster rocket launches, again, like you'd have to do all sorts of custom scripting for that, or a new graphical user interface, not a thing. So I do think that the quality of life stuff they're adding is a really big deal, because it's stuff that we couldn't do even with mods before. And then moving on to Friday Facts 406, it's all about the music. This one was really interesting, because music is often, I'll just say it, it's often an afterthought in games. Because, first of all, it's even in games where music is a bigger deal, it's never the whole game. Unless we're talking about something like Dance Dance Revolution, or, you know, like literally music games, which are a very specific genre. It's always just the background, right? It's an aesthetic. It's just something that you have, and often you don't even notice it. In most games, you don't notice the music, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing that you don't notice it, because if you notice it, it usually means one of two things. It's either really bad or it's really good. And if you notice it because it's really good, that's fine. But often you're noticing music because it's jarring. And jarring is not something you want. And Factorio music, I think, in Vanilla Factorio, did a really good job of not being jarring. It's just this beautiful soundscape that's kind of in the background. It makes you think of an alien planet, and it's there to help you build. And I'm actually quoting, I'll talk more about the new music here in a second, but they talk a little bit about what the soundtrack tries to do for Space Age. And they say, and I'm quoting here, "In general, what the soundtrack tries to do is to accompany the player throughout all the mental processes required by the game, to focus the attention at the time of designing the factories and its logistics. So the music should create a balanced and relaxed atmosphere to allow the player to concentrate. The music is not decoration. It helps the player to have a better immersive experience and also to visualize what is not shown on the screen, which is almost like the emotion of the game." What's really interesting about this is they hired an actual orchestra composer. They've been working on it since November of 2021. So we're talking over 2.5 years now that they've been working on the music for Space Age. They talk a little bit about his extensive qualifications. The guy's name is Peter Washar. I do not know how to pronounce that name. It is not within my ability to pronounce. And, or maybe it's Peter. It's P-E-T-R is how you spell it. I'm not totally sure how you pronounce that. But he's got a lot of qualifications. And one of the things they liked about him is his modern style and his ability to experiment. And he has some electronic music kind of styles as well as having the orchestra experience. What I think is really interesting is they decided on having a real orchestra. We're talking, they mentioned 178 people involved in making this music, you know, strings, horns, all of it. And the company is called Soundsgate. That is kind of representing this whole process. And they actually started recording the sessions in November of last year. So what is that, about 6 months now that they've been working on this project? They show a bunch of pictures of the recording process, which is pretty cool. So you can pull those up on the Friday Facts. And what's interesting is that it's very different than the vanilla Factorio music. What they do in the Friday Facts is they actually give you snippets of different planets' music. I'll get to the actual music snippets in a second. They did mention one more thing, which is that the Factorio engine doesn't know what's happening in the game. A lot of games have battle music, for example. So they've got more, like a lot of RTS games is what I'm thinking about right now. But you'll have more peaceful music, and then you'll get into combat, and the music will do some sort of magic fade system, and it'll fade out the peaceful music and fade in the battle music. And it's this intense, usually, you know, loud music that makes you feel like big things are happening while you're in the battle. And then once the battle's over, it'll kind of fade out the battle music and fade in the peaceful music again. And a lot of games have that kind of fade in, fade out, depending on what's happening in the game. But they mention they can't do that in Factorio based on the way the engine works. And they mention how that's very limiting, because how can you design music that works when you're fighting biters and you're fighting for your life to not die? And it also, the same music is going to sound fine when you're just connecting two pipes together. You know, this mundane thing, and you're just like walking around connecting some pipes. And how can the same music work for both settings? And they're like, well, it can't be about, the music can't make you feel the action. It needs to make you feel the atmosphere, right? Because the atmosphere of the planet and the atmosphere of the setting you're in is going to be the same regardless of whether you're fighting biters or building your factory. So it wants to focus far more on the atmosphere of the planet and the situation you're in rather than the, you know, the actions you're taking. And I think that's pretty cool. I think that makes a lot of sense. It will still be a bit odd, I think, sometimes, because, you know, there isn't that differentiation between battle and non-battle music. I'm fine with not having battle music. The current Factorio sounds are not battle music at all, and I've never felt weird about it. I have felt that eventually I got bored of the Factorio music. I know some of you are gonna rage at me for saying that, and some of you think that the Factorio music was sent by God himself. But, you know, it's an hour of fairly, you know, chill tracks. But I do think they get old after a while. And so I listen to a lot of low wave or lo-fi music kind of as a substitute, which I think is a good substitute for the vanilla Factorio music. But onto the actual music that they share, it's very different. Orchestral music is very different than what Vanilla Factorio has. They have an example of the Vulcanus music. And there's a clip for Vulcanus, there's a clip for space travel, there's a clip for Fulgora, which is the lightning planet. And then there's one more clip of 8 minutes of one of the planets they haven't shared yet, which is really cool. So the Vulcanus one, when I listened to that, it was really different. I mean, it's this epic, like, string music, there's horns. It immediately made me think of Lord of the Rings or, like, Game of Thrones or some sort of fantasy music, which is not at all what Vanilla Factorio does. So potentially too epic even. I'm not sure if that music fits for just chilling and building your factory. It feels like a very different vibe than the Nauvis music to me. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of the difference, they were trying to make it sound like it was going to be consistent kind of vibe from the vanilla music that they made to the new music. But then you listen to this Vulcanus example, and I don't think that it's consistent at all. In terms of, like, Vanilla Factorio music versus this new music, it's a completely different vibe. Is it a bad vibe? I don't think so, but it is different. And I'm wondering if they need to re-record, well, re-record's the wrong word. If they need to remaster or make a new soundscape for Nauvis that matches all of the new soundscapes that we're going to get for all these other planets. They also do, they give you the Fulgora example, which is the one with lightning. And they're kind of walking the Spidertron around while there's a lightning storm. And it's this kind of like electronic bass riff music. It's really cool. It's a very different vibe than the Vulcanus one. But again, it's still a much more evocative music than the original Nauvis. I think the original Factorio music does a very good job in staying out of your way. You don't notice it unless you're really trying to listen for it, or you have the volume cranked up higher on the music than everything else. It really does sit in the background of your mind. It does a good job of that. I think the new music, you will notice it. It's cool. It sounds really good. I like to listen to it. I think I will probably enjoy listening to the soundtrack of Space Age far more than Vanilla Factorio. But again, that's different. It sticks out more. You will notice it more. You will sometimes notice maybe the music not fitting what you're doing more than before. And so it'll be interesting to see if they make some changes to the vanilla track or not. I think they don't want to disrespect the guy who did Vanilla Factorio music, and I get that. I also think the new music is different enough that it is going to feel a little weird going from the soundscape on Nauvis to these five different soundscapes, the four other planets and space, they mention, being the other soundscapes. I think it'll feel pretty different. And it'll kind of be like a one of these is not like the others type feeling. And yeah, we'll see if they do anything about it. We'll see if it feels good. They mentioned there's still a lot of iterations left to do on all of the tracks. And so nothing's final. They're just sharing some snippets of what they have already. All this to say, I'm very excited about the new music. I think it's going to be really good. I do think there are some questions about how, okay, this is different than what you did before. Are you going to do anything to make the old music more cohesive with the new music? And is it going to work? Or is it going to be maybe a little bit of a downside and more players are going to turn off the music after Factorio Space Age? I was reading the Reddit thread on this Factorio Friday Facts, and there seemed to be some strong opinions on both sides. Some people were like, oh my God, this is the best thing since sliced bread itself. And other people were like, this sounds terrible. I don't want this in my factory game. Like, I want what we had from Vanilla Factorio, which was far more kind of a peaceful background style and quieter, rather than like horns and strings and chords and, you know, 70 instruments all playing at the same time. It's just a very different vibe. So all that to say, one last thing I want to talk about is they did, like I said, they had an 8-minute audio track without a video. The other ones, they have a little video to go with it. And this is because the track is for a planet they haven't talked about yet. And it was interesting to look even in the Reddit comments, people trying to guess which planet it's for. And I will talk a little bit about some spoilery things. They haven't officially revealed what the other two planets are, but some people have done some work, you know, in trying to figure out what they are, and there are some pretty good guesses. So if you don't want to know what they are, I would skip ahead about 30 seconds. But I think the music that they had is for the planet Aquilo, or Aquilo, which is going to be a water and or ice planet. And that just, I don't know, it felt very kind of mysterious and cold to me. Because as far as we know, the other planet, the fifth planet, or I don't know if it's fourth and fifth or fifth and fourth, but the other one is going to be, it looked like Glieba or Gleba, and that might have been an old name because we've also heard Bacchus as the other name. And that'll be sort of a grassy, foresty, mossy planet. And it, I didn't get those vibes from the music, so I think it's going to be Aquilo. So anyway, we'll see if that is correct or not. I don't know. That's just my guess. I did like the music for sure. But again, it's different. There's a little bit of me that's like, do I like this? I like the music, but do I like it for Factorio? Do I like it for I'm sitting here building conveyor belts? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see about that. Some small other notes from the Factorio Friday facts. They show in the video of the space platform with the music for space, which I did like the space music too. I think that might have been my favorite, actually. They showed rocket turrets taking out the asteroids. That was pretty neat. So we're getting at least one new weapon. But I mean, come on. We knew they'd give us new weapons in the expansion. So we've got rocket turrets, that's confirmed. And then one other thing that people noticed on the Reddit, and I actually couldn't unsee it after they mentioned it, there are steam turbines on the space platform, and the steam is going up and to the left, just like it does in Vanilla Factorio, but you're in space, so that makes absolutely no sense. So I do hope that they have a little bit of a different animation in space for the steam engines to kind of make the steam do more what it would do in real life. They also mentioned there's crucibles on the space platform, which are the new kind of smelting building. And the animation shows a little molten crucible thing dumping molten metal into a cast, which requires gravity, which there isn't in space, right? Unless, you know, you have artificial gravity, but that's definitely not happening on these big flat space platforms you have. So that's a little weird because you're literally watching a machine that needs gravity operate perfectly fine in space, which is a little odd. So I wonder if they potentially will have some unique animations or not. Obviously, it's more work. There might not be, but yeah. So all that to say, new Factorio Friday facts are pretty great. Still nothing, I wouldn't say super juicy. The music is pretty interesting and the quality of life stuff is great, but nothing like, oh, there's all this new content to talk about, like the quality modules or something. So they haven't dropped a super juicy Friday facts for a while. So I'm feeling like we're going to get a new planet pretty soon. They did mention, though, that next week is going to be more about music. So we will hear even more about the music in this next week. And then after that, I'm hoping we get something big. And man, I just hope we get the game soon. I'm ready for it, but we're probably still a ways out. Let's be honest. Okay, so I want to move on now to the main topic of this podcast, which is what makes a good factory game? That's a big question. And I don't think we're going to get to the full depth of this topic, but it is an interesting one. What makes a good factory game? It's a fairly new genre. This genre has not been around that long. If you boil it down to its core components, sure, the idea of, you know, numbers go up has been around for a while. I would even argue that idle games are in a way the predecessor of factory games. Factory games are a little bit like idle games married with a few other systems that kind of create a new genre, but it has a lot of the same core elements. So I made a little bit of a list, and this is by no means complete, and I am not a professional game designer, though there's part of me that is, like I do dabble. I may be a journeyman game designer, but I'm not a professional. I have not, you know, I have no degree in game design. I do have a degree in math, though, which is you know, you definitely use math in game design, but it's not the same thing. So I made a bit of a list in what makes a good factory game, and I'll dive into each of these points, but there are quite a few of them, so let me list them out real quick, and then I'll go into each one with some more depth. The first one is exponentiation, if I can even say the words, automation, challenge, progression, logistics, breadth versus depth, complexity soft walls, fun slash motivation, alternation slash cycling of a gameplay loop, intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation, and freedom of design. And we'll dive into each of these. I do think these are all really important topics to talk about within a factory game. And again, it's not an exhaustive list. There are lots of things I didn't mention music. Music is important in a good factory game. I would argue that the Satisfactory music is my favorite in the genre. I think it makes the game better. I know I'm going to get roasted probably for saying this. I don't think the Factorio music makes the game better. I think it makes the game good. It supports the game that's already there. It doesn't bring it down. I think it keeps it where it should be. I think it's the quality and type of music you would expect in a game like that. But I don't think, what am I trying to say? I don't think it just makes the game a completely new level of game. But again, that's a personal opinion. So I left music off the list because I'm thinking more about gameplay here than, you know, all of the pieces that go into designing a game, right? We're talking about what makes a good factory game, not what makes a good video game. There are a lot of elements, you know, like music or art design or things like that, that are just true for every video game that's ever been made, or even every, not even just video games, even board games. Just if you're making a game, there are lots of important questions, but specifically factory games. And I want to focus on the factory elements and automation elements here. So back to the list. Exponentiation. This one is the first one I thought of when I thought of a factory game. When you start Factorio, you are literally clicking on iron ore, tick, 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 one iron ore, tick, 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 two iron ore, you know, and then you're throwing it into a smelter and you're watching one iron plate smelt at a time. Then once you have enough iron plates, you can make another burner miner. And now you've got the burner miner mining the iron ore for you. And now you can put that into two smelters because now you've got the burner miner plus your own mining. And then you're getting twice as many plates. And then now you have twice as many plates. You can make two burner miners and you can keep multiplying, right? And once you have five burner miners, you can make five times as many plates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So exponentiation is this idea that when you have twice as many resources, you can then produce twice as many results. And that will then help you produce more production. And that's how you go exponential. Idle games, you know, I'm going to go back to idle games a lot in talking about this because I think idle games and factory games have a lot of overlap in what makes them good. And the exponentiation is a big deal. You need more of the things you're making for the factory game to be fun, right? If you could only ever get one more burner miner per minute and you could never do anything to increase that rate, I don't think that would be a great factory game. You need to be able to get more the faster you go. And using the word exponentiation is a bit of a misnomer. Someone's even mentioning it right now on the on the Twitch. I don't literally mean that it needs to be an exponential formula. It could be quadratic. It could even be linear. But it's the idea that you scale up more and more as the game goes on. And often it is going to be some form of exponential, even if the base of the exponent is only like 1.1. You know, you only get 10% more for every hour you play. And often it's exponential at first, but then you become limited by other things, right? Technically, Factorio is exponential at all points. You could just use burner miners and stone furnaces for the entire game. Twice as many burner miners will get you twice as many iron plates, which will allow you to make twice as many burner miners. And if you had infinite space and infinite ore, and time wasn't a factor, let's say the player could teleport and it was run by a computer who could click infinite clicks per second, then yeah, you've got an idle game. And now you can essentially do exponential growth. But obviously the exponential growth is limited by things like how big is your iron patch? How many buildings can you actually fit on the iron patch? How much ore can you put on a yellow belt? How fast can the player run around and do these things? How fast can the player's brain even think? And those are all going to slow down the exponential nature of growth. But at the core, it's the exponential nature of growth is still there. It's just that there are other limiting factors besides, you know, how many iron plates do you need to make more burner drills? And I think that's what's important, is it's not that you need to be able to produce things exponentially, but it's that the concept of if I have twice as many resources, I can produce twice as many producers, and then that keeps multiplying. I think that's an important factor. And as far as I know, every factory game I've played has that. Idle games don't. Idle games, often your buildings will get more expensive as you build more of them, because if you're in an idle game, then you're going to get out of hand really fast. Some idle games let you go exponential, but then they have other things that increase costs exponentially with it. But in all the factory games I've played, the cost of producing your production remains constant. And it is all of these other factors that limit, you know, things like time, space, etc., that limit you. So what's the next big thing? And this one almost goes without saying, so I thought about not adding it, but I mean, it's important to talk about automation. What makes a good factory game? Well, being able to build factories. The idea that something you would normally have to do by hand or work hard for, such as crafting, let's say, an inserter, you have to click on it. Well, now you can automate it. And I think it's important to force the player to do some things by hand that you then later can automate. It's a slippery slope. If you force the player to do too much for too long, it feels grindy and it's not fun. And if you let the player automate everything from the get-go, it's not as rewarding. So there's a very interesting back and forth that devs have to do when they're designing a factory game of what are we going to inconvenience the player with, and then later convenience them with automation. And I think those are really important decision points for your game. You know, one example of this is like, how many burner drills should you start the game with in Factorio? I believe currently you start with one. If you started with zero, would the game be that different? Maybe, maybe not. But having one drill allows you to at least automate one type of ore at the beginning that you then don't have to click on to mine. Most people will pick iron, but maybe you don't want to mine coal. And so you put the drill on coal and then you can go focus on mining iron. So it already is doing, you know, the work of one clicking on an ore patch for you, which is nice. So anyway, automation is a really important concept for factory games. And I don't think it's just about the fact that your factories automatically produce things. It's more about, are you providing the player with ways to automate actions, actual game actions that you used to do by hand and now the game is doing for you? Again, idle games are very good at this. Often, you know, once you get later in the game, you don't have to buy more production buildings automatically. In games like Factorio, this is often represented by things like blueprints. So instead of having to build the miners over and over and over again, you can paste a blueprint on top of the ore patch, and now all the miners get placed by the bots. And so Factorio does provide these step-by-step bits where it's like, okay, I don't have to automate that anymore. Now I have assemblers, so inserters can be crafted for me, and all I have to do is pick them up. And then later you get bots, and now you can place blueprints, and et cetera, et cetera. Satisfactory has a lot of similar ideas. One thing I like about Satisfactory is the automation of movement. You unlock something like a jetpack, which now you don't have to put jump pads everywhere, which was something you had to put effort and work into being able to traverse your factory. Now you have the jetpack, and you can just fly up a level. So all you really need is some space to be able to fly around. And that is, in a way, automation of movement. Literal automation of movement is the hypertubes. You literally just have your start and end point, you pop in the front and whoosh, there you go. And so it's really interesting to look at these games and how they automate away different manual labor that you had to do. And I think that's a really important question to ask when you're developing? What things do we want to inconvenience the player with? And alternately, what things do we then want to remove the inconvenience of, which will feel very good for the players? So that is the automation. Challenge is the next point. If the game's too easy, it's not a great game. And this one, I think, falls under any game. You know, any video game needs to be challenging in some respects. Otherwise, it's not going to be fun. That's true of most things in life, even. But specifically in a factory game, the challenge should be something that allows you to actually get into the nitty-gritty of what's possible within the game. For example, with Factorio, if to launch a rocket, you only needed one low-density structure, one rocket control unit, and one rocket fuel, I don't think the game would be challenging enough. Because since you only need one of each of those, you could just build one factory, you could hand-feed it the items that it needs, and then you'd be done. And you launch the rocket, and you win. So the challenge is more that they're saying, hey, you need to get 1,000 of each of these. I'm ignoring productivity modules here. And because you need 1,000 of each of them, you're probably not going to just stick them in one assembler, though you could, and it would work. It wouldn't happen very fast. And so the challenge is in the numbers for Factorio. But there are other ways to challenge the player. For example, biters and having combat turned on by default. Well, that's a challenge. If you produce more pollution and you focus more on your factory, you're going to get attacked more. And if you don't ever go out and kill the biters, then you're going to get attacked and you need to defend. And so you have to pick, do I want to expand the factory? If I do want to expand the factory, then I have to kill some biters. And you keep forcing the player to focus on different aspects as they go throughout the challenge, and they can't just do everything they want from the start. So I do think challenging the player with larger numbers or with enemies or with things like cliffs, even you could imagine cliffs and the water as a challenge because they can't just build wherever they want. They have to actually deal with, you know, focusing on how do I build the base that I want in the space that I've been given. And all video games have lots of ways to add challenge to the player. But in a factory game, the challenge tends to be how big is your base going to have to be? How many of each building are you going to need to build? How long is it going to take you to build those buildings? And how difficult is it going to be to build those buildings? Will you have blueprints that will help you, or will you not? You know, and that's where overhaul mods get into different challenge spaces. For example, the challenge of Pyanodons is very different than the challenge of space exploration. Often an argument among Factorio fans is which one's harder. And as much as I do think there is a correct answer of Pyanodons, it's still a very interesting discussion because they're not the same type of challenge. And there are ways that space exploration challenges you that Pyanodons does not. And so as much as like overall, just in how hard it is in a lot of brute force measurements, Pyanodons is harder. There are some things about Pyanodons that's easier than space exploration. And, you know, you don't have to deal with multi-surface logistics, right? That's a big thing in space exploration that doesn't exist. And that's not easy, right? You do have to consider circuits. You have to solve problems in space exploration that you haven't solved in vanilla Factorio, thus creating a new challenge. And that's part of what makes it fun, right? A good factory overhaul mod is asking all the same questions that the factory game in the first place is asking. Like, what is Factorio challenging you with that you haven't done in other games before? Well, fighting biters. That's not something you've done in other games. Now, you have fought enemies in other games, but the specific way that they challenge you and the specific things they ask you to make, you know, how you place the turrets, how often do the enemies attack? These are all finely tuned elements of the challenge. And of course, you have the settings. You can add more biters. You can turn on, you know, research multipliers. They do give some agency to the player in how much they want to be challenged. But there's also some amount of the game itself that's saying, we will challenge you in this way, and there's nothing you can do to avoid it. Unless, of course, you just turn on creative mode, which I wouldn't really count. The next thing on the list is progression. You have to get somewhere in terms of what you're capable of doing. If you start the game with the ability to build everything, and the ability to, you know, construct the nuclear rockets and the Spidertrons, and or in Satisfactory, if you started the game with already having trains and everything, there's no progression, right? And most of these games, factory games, use a tech tree. I don't think a tech tree is necessary. It is the way that everybody does it right now, and it is a good way. It's a kind of tried and true way to give the player progression is, hey, we're going to have a tech tree. You start at the beginning. You can only build a few things. And then as you progress through the game, usually by spending resources in some fashion, science packs in Satisfactory, it's sending large amounts of the resources you can craft in the space elevator. And once you do that, then you unlock the next set of technologies and you can build more things there. And that's pretty great. But the progression is a really important question as you're developing a factory game. How is the player going to progress? If it's technology, how are they going to do the technology? One game that I want to focus on here is actually Factory Town. Factory Town is really interesting to me because they don't use a traditional tech tree. And they have Factory Town, if you haven't played it, is it is an automation slash factory game. I mean, it's in the name, Factory Town. And if you haven't played it, I would highly recommend it. It starts off a little janky and weird, to put it bluntly. But once you've kind of gotten used to how it works and how the UI works and everything, I'm guessing that as a fellow factory game lover, you will love Factory Town. It really sucks you in once you get going. Because they have this system of population, and then there are coins. And when you provide the population with things that they need, starting out with like water and berries, then you get coins as a reward for that. But there's different colors of coins, which you could consider, you know, different science packs, sort of. And to unlock things, you need to use those coins. But then sometimes you provide your people with things like paper or books, and that gets you knowledge points, which can unlock different things. So in Factory Town, rather than having a tech tree, there's really more like different avenues of progression. And altogether, you know, it's in essence a tech tree, right? You need more stuff and then you get the ability to make new things. But it's not just a literal like a flow chart of one thing's connected to the next thing. And when you click on one, it unlocks the next three ones. It's not that type of tech tree. And I really liked that about Factory Town because it's not your standard progression mechanic. You know, something like Captain of Industry definitely is your standard progression mechanic. You build labs, the labs do science, you click on the thing you want to research, it takes time to research, and then you unlock new stuff. There's nothing wrong with that, but I do think that having an interesting progression mechanic like Factory Town, if you do it well, can be a big boon to your game. And if you just use the basic tech tree with labs, well, you're not going to add anything special to your game because other games already do that. And some games do it really well. And if that's all you have, no one's going to praise your game for, you know, breaking new ground here. Tech trees are old at this point. And I do think in some ways they're kind of taking the easy way out. I think games can do better than tech trees now. And I think, you know, it always depends on what do you want to be the interesting pieces about your game. Kind of like we were talking about music earlier, a tech tree doesn't get in the way of your game, but it's not something that players are going to rave about. So, you know, whereas in Factory Town, the system of progression, I do think is something you can rave about for that game. And that's pretty cool. I need to move on because this podcast is going to be 10 hours if I don't move on. The next one is logistics. This is the big one. I don't know why I didn't start with this. Because I would argue that in many ways, logistics is what makes a factory game a factory game, or a factory slash automation. How do you move items from point A to point B? The fact that items exist is already part of what makes a factory game, right? You know, in a game like Diablo, yes, there are items, but they're equipment for your character. There's no such thing as just like an iron plate. RPGs sometimes have items, you know, like Skyrim, you've got iron bars, but those are for crafting equipment, and there's no system where you can move iron bars from one place to another. You can drop them in the game world, but that's about it. Then you have games like No Man's Sky, where there's a little bit of automation. You know, you can generate items in a building, but it's not a factory game per se, because you can't really move items from one place to another, and then a building, it's like factory game light, I guess. No Man's Sky did add some base building that makes it super light factory game elements. But then you look at stuff like Factorio or Satisfactory, and it's like, oh, we have conveyors everywhere. There's items on conveyors being put into other buildings, and then those are being crafted into something. And then those items go from that building to a different building, and then those items go on a train, and then that train takes items to another spot on the map, and then bots carry the items from that train to the nuclear power plant, and, you know, you get what I'm saying. So how do your items move from point A to point B is the big question. And we can look at the big three Dyson Sphere program. You know, you've got the conveyor belts, which can go up and down, which is really nice. And the little, I forgot what they're called. Are they called inserters? They work differently than Factorio inserters, though, in Dyson Sphere program. It's like a belt will be going past a building, like on the side of the building. And these little doodads will just grab items off the belt and go back and forth. And you don't actually need a space between the belt and the building. Whereas in Factorio, the inserter is an actual entity that sits on the ground on the space between the building and the belt, and it grabs item off the belt, it goes into the building. I haven't played Tectonica more than 5 minutes, but Tectonica inserters work the same way as that. Satisfactory is interesting because it's all belt fed. Satisfactory, there are no inserters. You hook a belt up directly into the input of a building, and the items flow, you know, into the building on the belt, and then they flow out of the building on a belt. And so instead of inserters, you end up using splitters, and you split each belt that goes into the building. So you can have 10 things provided on one belt for 10 buildings, for example. And then often you mix progression with logistics, right? You often start with belts and inserters in these games, and then later you unlock more convenient forms or more high volume forms of transportation. Trains are in a lot of these games because people love trains. Oh my goodness. You put a train system in your game and people are just going to play your game for that train system. There are lots of people that play Factorio more as a train simulator than anything else, and it's fun. It's fun to watch trains fly around your base, and they move all sorts of stuff around. Games like Factorio have bots, and Dyson Sphere program has bots. Satisfactory, I forget which update, but they added bots, and that's kind of the catch-all. I want it easy. I want the easy route. I just want to say, hey, take this item and take it from point A to point B, and I don't want to have to manually draw any lines or connect any dots. I just want the item to get from point A to point B. And that's a dangerous thing to give the player because it removes all challenge, right? A bot in Factorio can take anything from anywhere to anywhere, and all it costs you is electricity. And electricity is pretty cheap. So in Factorio, a bot-based base really is a different challenge. There are still challenges, but you've kind of removed the logistics challenge at that point. And the challenge becomes about other things. And so it's a very dangerous thing to offer the player, and I think it's done well in Factorio. You have to get quite far before you have bots. And I also think bots are limited in mainly how, you know, Factorio doesn't limit them very well because you can place a bunch of charging ports. But in Satisfactory, for example, they do take a lot of those batteries. They're kind of expensive. And they're big and kind of clunky, and so you can't just build thousands of them like you can in Factorio. And then in Dyson Sphere program, well, you have to get items from one planet to another. So you use the big, I'm forgetting what they're called, but the big cargo transports. But then there's the smaller cargo transports kind of on the planet that you can use similar to logistics bots. And so that's an interesting part of, you know, how you balance your game. Are the bots going to be easy and cheap, or are they going to be difficult? I'm playing through Pyanodons right now in Factorio, and the bots are very expensive and very slow. And that's sort of how they're balancing it is, okay, you can get bots, but they're not just going to play the game for you at this point. You're going to have to do some work to get enough of them to matter. One thing that's being mentioned that I forgot to mention is Satisfactory has trucks. And that is a unique element to Satisfactory because of the 3D. I guess you could do this in 2D as well, but Factorio doesn't. is you can kind of program a truck to go from point A to point B, but you have to drive the route yourself, which I think is pretty cool. It's kind of a cool compromise where in essence, it does work like a logistics bot, but it only goes on the one path that you previously programmed it to do. And so it's kind of like a logistics bot that you do the first time and then it keeps going. So it does operate a bit more like a belt or a train in that you are connecting specific spots to other specific spots where it can't do the thinking for you. But it does allow you to not have to create a physically built path. You don't have to make a belt or a train track. You just drive. And that's pretty fun. I could see Satisfactory in the future adding a flying vehicle that can do the same thing, but then you don't have to worry about like, can I actually drive on this path or are there going to be trees or cliffs in the way? I could see them adding like a little flying helicopter or something. That could be cool. Or maybe a model at it. I don't know. Anyway, moving on. Logistics. We talked about that. Breadth versus depth. This one's interesting. Do you have 50 different buildings or do you have one complicated building? When you're designing a factory game, you have to decide how deep are your systems going to be. Factorio is not incredibly deep, especially vanilla Factorio. Modded is a different story. But in vanilla Factorio, the only system that I would argue there's a ton of depth to is the circuit system, right? You can do a lot with circuits. You can play the Rick Roll video on circuits, and that is obviously incredibly deep. The other systems are actually quite... shallow is a bad word, has negative connotations to it, but I am using it just for its dictionary definition. Like, you can see how deep the system is from the top. You know, you can see the bottom of the pool standing outside the pool with a lot of Factorio systems, like the train system. It does what you'd expect it to do. It can't really do more than that. They do the thing they do. You put the items in the train, it takes the items to where you want them to go. There are ways to control where the trains go. There is more depth being added to the train system in the Space Age update, and I think that will actually turn it into maybe more than meets the eye, you know, more than what you can see on the surface. But right now, it's really a pretty simplistic system, and same with belts and inserters and the assemblers. You know, you put the ingredients in the assembler, it makes the item, you take the output out of the assembler. There's not much more going on there. Modules are a little bit of depth. You know, you can't just see it from the top. So all that to say, breadth versus depth is an important question because then you have games like Desynced. I have not played Desynced yet. It's on my wish list, and I do plan to play it at some point, probably stream it or make a YouTube series. But one thing I do know about Desynced, because I've read a bunch of reviews, is that it can be very deep. Because you actually do, I don't know if it's literally coding or it's pseudo-coding, but you sort of code the behavior that you want your units to have, and that is a very deep system. No longer can you see from the outside all of the possibilities. You actually have to kind of play the game and be good at the game to start to see what's even possible with the game. And that can be dangerous. I've seen a lot of negative reviews for Desynced for this very reason. And one game that I played in more recent knowledge that is a good example of this is Space Engineers. Space Engineers has the ability to code in the game and control certain things via coding. On one hand, that's awesome. On the other hand, it actually makes me feel like I don't want to play the game because I know that I, as someone who doesn't do coding in games generally, unless it's super simplistic, I'm never going to be able to make the optimal things. Like in Satisfactory, you can make these cool Space Engineers is what I'm trying to talk about here. You can make these cool sorting algorithms where buildings automatically send their products where you want them to go. And it can start to approach a factory type game with coded solutions. But the problem is without coded solutions, there's no simple ways to do that. There's no splitters, there's no filter splitters, there's no conveyor belts where you can just connect things and it just works. So Space Engineers has massive depth, but the problem is you can't do a lot of things without engaging in that depth. And that right there is going to prevent a lot of players from actually getting the most out of your game because you're saying you're only allowed to play at this level if you dive this deep. So I think Factorio has done a really good job of keeping things very broad. They've got a lot of things you can do, but most of the things are very approachable and you don't need to go super deep to engage with them on their level, with circuits being the one exception. But the reason that works out okay is you don't need circuits. You don't need to build one wire. I don't think they're ingredients in any things, but you don't need to build one wire to beat the game in Factorio. Whereas, you know, if you want to, and you don't need to build one wire to get all the functionality out of your machines in Factorio. Really, it's more extra stuff that isn't necessary to play the game. And again, it's like, okay, well, do you even have to do that in Space Engineers? You can play the game without doing any of the coding. And it's true, but the amount of optimal stuff that you can do with the coding, like you can make things that automatically aim guns for you and things like that, which is very different than just Factorio, where you can maybe make your train schedule work a little better with circuits or something. The amount that a player who doesn't engage with circuits and a player who does engage with circuits, their final factories aren't going to be that much different. You can build a mega base still without circuits. Whereas with something like Space Engineers, the difference between a player who has all these, you know, code implementations on their ship versus one who doesn't, it's not even a competition. Like, what you can do with that coding is absurdly powerful. And you can't approach that same sort of functionality without it. Whereas with the circuits, I would argue that like it's a much closer gap. All that to say, I think the breadth versus depth is a very important question to ask yourself in a factory game. There's not a wrong answer. It's more just something you need to consider. And what sorts of players are you looking for? Because if you have very deep systems, that can sometimes turn off players to certain parts of your game. I need to blow through these last few because we're already over an hour. Fun and motivation. Why are we even playing this game? Is it fun? A factory game is only fun if... the floor here is made of floor. A factory game is only fun if it's fun. And I know that sounds dumb, but it really matters that the core things you're doing are enjoyable. Is it fun to plop down factories and to connect belts? If not, then you're doing something wrong. Factory games in particular can feel like work. So it's very important. Shooters are going to be fun by default, right? Like you get dopamine from shooting something and watching it explode or die or fall apart or whatever it is in whatever game you're playing. There are some more intrinsic rewards to shooter games or puzzle games. It feels good to solve the puzzle. Like once you get the solution, there's this little hit of dopamine you get like, oh yeah, I did it. Like in Portal, when you beat a level, it just feels good. In Factorio, those are a bit more vague, right? Like you finished putting together a production line and it feels good to see it run, but that's not quite the same. And so you do need to make the core work part also fun. Like, is it actually fun to build the belts? You know, and I think Factorio, even the sound it makes when you place buildings and belts is part of that. Like it's a fun sound when you click and hold a belt and run on it. And it makes that little ticking noise as you place it. There's something nice about that. In Satisfactory, when you place a belt or a building, even, you can see all the little pieces that are going into that belt kind of flying out of your character. There's a visual interestingness to building something. It makes a cool sound. I think those are really important elements to these factory games, because otherwise it can feel extra tedious and like a lot of work to build the factory. So it's important to make the game fun for the player, even when they're doing things that might feel like work. Next point, alternation / cycling of the gameplay loop. This one's important. I think some games are far more looping than others. There are some games that don't loop at all. I'll just use Halo Deathmatch as an example. I guess the gameplay loop is live, die, repeat, but that's not really... It is just one gameplay. You run around and you shoot people and you try to get more kills. There's no loop of like a mini game that you do in between each match or in between each life. You have to, you know, do a Tetris puzzle. Like that's the kind of gameplay loop you're thinking of here. And Halo doesn't have it, at least not in deathmatch mode. Whereas something like, lost my train of thought, but in Factorio, one of the main gameplay loops is combat. And I do believe this is why combat is in the base game. It's to break up the gameplay, rather than just having the player build a factory and then build more factory and then build more factory. Oh, and then after you do that, you build more factory. Instead of that, they have build some factory. Now biters are going to attack you. And then you have to deal with biters. And now you're almost playing a different game for a minute. And you're focusing on a completely different goal. You're doing a different task. The way that it feels and plays out is different. And maybe you deal with biters for a while. And then you go back and deal with the factory for a while. And it's this breath of fresh air when you switch from one to the other. You know, and with games like, oh, that's what it was, XCOM. I was thinking of the turn-based squad games. That has a huge gameplay alternation, right? You're going between the overworld, where you're managing your squad, you're purchasing new weapons, you're figuring out what research you're going to do, you're building some sort of base or buildings. And then you have the tactical combat, where you're actually in a mission and you're commanding your squad and who's going to shoot this guy when and what square are you going to move to. And you go back and forth. And it's this gameplay loop that keeps you saying one more turn, right? Civilization is the classic one more turn game. And that one has a little bit of a gameplay loop, but I would argue something like Total War Warhammer is another example of a very good alternating gameplay loop. Because again, you've got the overworld and you've got the tactical battles. And you're literally switching almost between one game and another game frequently. And that can be so incredibly addicting in a good way. You know, I think it's good for players to have some form of, I want to keep playing. Obviously, gacha games and other things that prey on psychology to be addictive, I don't think is healthy, but it is good to design a game such that players want to keep coming back. And Factorio uses things like biter combat. And in Space Age, I think it's going to involve the logistics on other planets versus the logistics on the planet you're dealing with. I think that's going to be another good gameplay loop where it's like, okay, I'm focusing on making this one individual bit of factory on Nauvis. But then I have an alarm going off that circuits over on Fulgora aren't fast enough. So then there's this, like, it takes me out of what I'm doing in the local and forces me to zoom out to the global or even the interstellar or interplanetary, however you want to put it. And I think that is a good way to alternate the gameplay loop. Satisfactory does this via hard drives, right? You have to go exploring to find these alternate recipes and to find more of the resource nodes. I would even say Factorio having you build mining bases is part of this, right? The only reason iron ore runs out in the game is so that at some point you have to go build a new mining base somewhere. And that forces you to engage in, first of all, exploration. It forces you to engage in biter combat if biters are turned on. And it forces you to build something different than just more assemblers, so to speak. Like, you have to build miners and get more input resources. And so I think by having iron ore run out, Factorio kind of forces you into, again, a different cycle of a gameplay loop, which is interesting. That kind of leads me into the next point, which was intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation. This comes back to the fun category. I saw some Twitch comments that were hitting on this, and don't worry, guys, I'm getting there. Intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation is a huge question in factory games. If it's too sandboxy, we'll take classic Minecraft as an example. Classic Minecraft, 100% sandbox. There is... Back in my day, I'll use the sentence, they didn't have a quest book. You literally just fired up the game and you could do a bunch of stuff. That's it. That's all there was. There was no sense of extrinsic motivation of, oh, I want to go beat the nether whatever or the wither or whatever it's called in the end. The end dragon, I guess is what it's called nowadays. I have played some modded Minecraft recently. I do know some of the words, I promise. But yeah, the extrinsic motivation wasn't there, and I struggled to get into Minecraft because it was fun to build a base for a while. It was fun to collect things. It was fun to get diamond armor, you know, and there's a little bit of extrinsic motivation in having diamond armor and a diamond sword, because then when you see enemies, they're a little bit easier to kill and they're less likely to kill you. So there's some extrinsic motivation, but most of it was intrinsic. I like the feeling of having collected all these great things. I like the fact that I have so much diamond, I can build diamond blocks. So most of Minecraft, non-modded, is intrinsic motivation. And I think they actually realized this was a bit of a shortcoming, and that's why they now have things like the quest book. And that's why they added something like the end, with the End Dragon and the Wither thing, because then there are some bosses that you're motivated to go kill. And there's actually some extrinsic rewards to progressing through the game. And Factorio obviously has extrinsic motivation, like unlocking new technologies that can do more for you, being able to get better weapons to kill the biters, being able to beat the game. It actually has a victory screen, right? And a victory screen is important. A lot of players are going to seek out winning the game. And so having a victory screen is important. In Satisfactory, you know, launching the space elevator tiers are the extrinsic motivation of like, okay, I want to complete the next task. That's going to help motivate me to do the work I need to do to construct all the factory bits so that I can complete that task. If there is no task, why is the player playing the game? And this is why I actually really struggle with intrinsic motivation. And that's part of why you don't see any series on YouTube of me making a mega base. Because a mega base in Factorio is entirely intrinsic motivation. There's no reason to build a mega base. You've already launched a rocket. You've already beat the game. You've already unlocked all the technologies. You've probably, you know, if you play a little bit after a rocket launch, you've also got a few of the infinite sciences. So your artillery have a big range. And there's not really anything more to do. And it's all about, I just want to do it because I want to do it. And that is something that you cannot assume your players are always going to have. They don't always want to do more just to do more. Some players do. There are mega base players out there who have spent most of their 2,000 hours in Factorio in one save, right? There are lots of players who are completely motivated intrinsically. And if you build a good sandbox for them, they will play in it forever. However, that's not all players, and I myself am far more of an extrinsically motivated player, and if you don't give me progression, and you don't give me a tech tree, and you don't give me some victory screen that I'm searching for, then I'm probably not going to play your game a ton. And it depends. There are some sandbox games I've put a lot of hours into just because they're so fun, and there's still some form of progression. Even just having better weapons or more technology somewhere in the game is in and of itself extrinsic motivation, even if you can't win. Like Dwarf Fortress, for example, you can't win Dwarf Fortress, but you can progress, right? You can get better materials. Your dwarves level up their skills and you can get more kingdom value and all that sort of thing. So there can be a mixture of the two. And I find for myself, I struggle to set personal goals that are just intrinsically motivated. And that's why something like Pyanodons is where players often will give up, because in Pyanodons, there's an incredible amount of work to get to the next thing that's extrinsically motivating. Like if I want red belts, well, I can just say goodbye to the next 500 hours, right? And so it's hard to stay motivated because there's no huge rewards along the way with intrinsic motivation. It's just like, well, I just have to have fun doing the thing. So in Pyanodons, really the key is to figure out how can I just have fun playing it step by step. You have to find that intrinsic motivation. And I also find this is a really interesting mental health topic. Like I think some of intrinsic motivation is even a little bit of like, how do you just have fun? And sometimes we actually struggle to have fun and we forget how to have fun and we forget that just playing a game can be fun, even if there's no rewards, because we get so addicted to these dopamine hits from things like solving a puzzle or, you know, a 5-second YouTube video or whatever. And we want all these hits. And sometimes we forget that, like, oh, it can just be fun to just play a game. And I know I struggle with that. And that's a topic for another podcast, I'm sure. But intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation, one of the more interesting topics, I think, with your factory game. And how are you going to motivate players to keep playing? And are you going to allow for sandbox? Because I haven't talked about the other side of the coin, and I need to wrap this up, but the other side of the coin is if it's all extrinsic, then the player feels too locked in, because really it feels kind of crappy to not be progressing towards one of those extrinsic motivators. And sometimes you feel like there's only one way to play the game, which is get to the rocket launch, because it's so rewarding. I'm just saying hypothetically, if you were to maybe lock a lot of technologies behind the rocket launch, like you couldn't get bots until you launch a rocket, or you couldn't get, you know, artillery until you launch a rocket, or you couldn't get trains until you launch a rocket. Let's imagine all of that was behind a rocket launch. well, now you've created a world where most of the motivation is extrinsic because the players want to play with those things, so they have to do a rocket launch. There's not this intrinsic, I want to do a rocket launch. There's this extrinsic, to play the game I want to play, I have to do a rocket launch. And so, you know, the more you create these extrinsic motivators, the more you actually can subtract some of the intrinsic. So there is a balance there. And again, I'm not a professional game dev, so I don't even know exactly the right answers to how you do that. But I do know that you can have too much of one versus the other. And some of it's about the audience you want playing your game. There's nothing wrong with making a game that has zero goals or quests, but there are players who will never play that game. And I tend to be one of them. It, again, you know, certain types of gameplay are so fun that it just works for me. But other games with no quests or goals, I'm just not interested. Finally, we'll talk about freedom of design. This, again, gets a little bit into the intrinsic motivation, but is there more than one way to solve the problem at hand? If I'm automating red science in Factorio, is there more than one way to do it? Yes. Yes, there is. There, we have all seen the posts on Reddit of, you know, someone saying my first time in Factorio, and you look at their red science setup and you giggle a little bit because you're like, I forgot what it was like to not know what I was doing. And it's really fun, though, because you know that their base works. It doesn't work very quickly, but it does create red science. And there's this cool freedom that you have in games like Factorio or Minecraft or Satisfactory where, yes, everyone's doing the same thing. Everyone needs to get iron. Everyone needs to get copper. And you need to smelt those things to get the next thing. That is kind of fixed. But there's so much freedom within that. Both visually, some people like to make their bases look cool. Some people like to make their bases look clean and neat and straight lines and nice corners. Other people like to create spaghetti, like Josh from Let's Game It Out. Watch his Satisfactory video and you'll cry a little bit on the inside. But it works. He progressed using that base. And I think that's what's beautiful, is that the freedom of design is there. And the game doesn't force you into doing it a certain way. Even if you want to do it well, there's multiple options. I mean, I'm by no means a very clean Factorio player, and I would say I'm still pretty good at Factorio. I mean, I don't really know what that word means, but I can get pretty far and succeed in automating things. And I don't have to do it perfectly neatly. In fact, some Factorio players say the more spaghetti, the better, right? And others are on the opposite end, and they say the less spaghetti, the better. And neither one is right, and neither one is wrong. There is this ability to say, I can play the game the way that I want to play it, and that will work to accomplish the goals. And that's pretty special, because I think I've talked about Halo a lot, but it's a good example because it's such a different genre. I think it works well to compare. You can't play Halo the way you want to play it. And I know there's arguments like, well, but you can be more defensive or offensive or more positional versus, you know, what? Okay, but you got to kill people, right? Like in some form or fashion, let's say 1v1, so you're not even dealing with team dynamics. You just have to shoot the other guy before he shoots you, or more than he shoots you, some combination of those two, and get more kills. There is only one way to do that in the sense of get more kills. It's true that, like, yeah, there's strategy within that. I'm not at all saying the game doesn't take strategy or there's not skill. And there's lots of freedom in what your favorite weapon is, maybe, or what you like to do in Halo. But there's only so much variation you can put on, I have to kill the other guy before he kills me. It's a very fixed task. There's not a lot of freedom within that. And the freedom that does exist is a smaller dimension of freedom. It's like, okay, what weapon am I going to kill him with? Well, that's not really deciding, do I even want to kill him? Whereas in Factorio, you can be like, do I even want to craft Spidertrons? You don't have to, right? There's so much freedom in what the game allows you to do. And yes, you do have to craft the items, but, you know, how many assemblers do you want to build? How do you want to use trains to transport items from here or there? Do you want to just use a super long belt? Do you want to use bots? Do you not want to use bots? Do you want to use blueprints? Do you even want to mine coal? Apophenia, someone who's on Twitch right now, recently completed a playthrough of Factorio without coal, which is very impressive. So all that to say, I'm not trying to diss shooters and say that they're not complicated or there's no freedom. It's simply that the types of freedom and the dimension of freedom is smaller, is maybe a way to say it. The amount of choice you have is still large, but it's fit within a smaller overall box. In the sense that the type of game that I'm playing when I play Halo is the same game that everyone else is playing. Whereas in Factorio, I would argue that's not true. Some players play Factorio as a train simulator almost more than anything else. And that is a very different type of game. And at the core, you can almost get a different game out of it. Modded Minecraft, same thing. Satisfactory. Some people play it and they mostly play it to build cool looking buildings. Maybe they just do art. You know, they make big walls and color them and paint them all different colors. And again, it's like that is a different game. And yeah, it's true. You know, Halo, you can do the Forge mode or whatever and just build cool maps. But I think you all get what I'm saying in the sense that the tasks within the game have a wider range of freedom in games like Factorio and Satisfactory. So I think it's important in your factory game to have freedom of design and try to add alternate solutions. If you're finding that all your players are solving a task the same way, then maybe that task is too streamlined. You know, maybe there needs to be some more flexibility within it. So all that to say, factory games are complicated. And what makes a good factory game is a complicated question. And I hope we've helped you understand some of the questions to ask. And again, helped you think about what makes a good factory game. I'm sure many of you have extra thoughts or maybe even some ways that you agree or disagree with me. Please stop by the Discord and feel free to chat me up there. I'd love to talk more about this. It will be something we talk about a lot in the future, I'm sure. I do need to wrap up because no time for viewer questions today with how long we've already gone. So if you'd like to support the podcast, please head over to patreon.com/Crydax. I'm very thankful to all my patrons. You guys help keep the streams going, keep food on the table. For joining, you get a special Discord roll color, shout outs, things like that, and some other perks as you go up the tiers. Please don't feel any pressure to do so, but it is a great way to support me if that works for you. And it's a great way to show your desire to keep the show going. Next week, we're going to be streaming the cast on Twitch at the standard time, which is Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern, which is 3 p.m. UTC. I believe we will have a guest on, but I will confirm that as we get closer to the date. And if you have any questions, ideas for topics, or ideas for guests, please head over to the Discord and let me know there. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Always remember, the factory must grow.